Welcome to Draft Sickos on the No Ceilings NBA.com YouTube channel and podcast feed. I am your host, Maxwell Baumbach, and on this show, we cover everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers, and I'm joined by the real star of the show, Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Maxwell, I'm awesome, but I'm not the star of today's show. As everyone can see on the YouTube channel, we are joined by a very special guest. Maxwell, why don't we go ahead and bring him in?
Yeah, we have the extra real star of the show here this week. He is the co-host of the Front Office NBA show, a contributor to Sport Track for the NBA side of the house, and he's a contributor to the Basketball Bulletin on Substack. He is Keith Smith. Keith, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me. Now I have to live up to all that nice stuff. So. I'll do my best, though.
I like to call everyone else the star of the show just to kind of alleviate pressure for myself.
No so pressure
when I
on
screw
Maxwell.
Things up or I mistime the ad reads or the breaks, anything like that, it's fine. Nobody
there knows. It is. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Set that bar low and then you just jump right over.
Nice and easy. Nice and easy. So the first thing we want to open with, Keith, you do a lot of work just kind of across the basketball spectrum, but I always just open up with how did you get kind of to where you are in the basketball world? What was that initial kind of foot in the door that led you to where you are now?
Yeah. So I've always loved basketball. I grew up just south of Boston on the Larry Bird Celtics. So that was, of course, right. You're going to fall in love with the game if that's what you grew up on. So I was really excited for, basketball, loved it my whole life. I openly admit I never didn't love the game, but I fell out of touch with the NBA a little bit in the kind of like mid 2000 range. I had moved to Florida. I loved the 2002 Celtics, have a special place in my heart because they were like that team that it back then, like they launched so many three pointers and went crazy and all this stuff. And I really did. I love that team. They were my connection to home when I first moved. So now I am, here in Florida. Don't have a ton of friends who love basketball. I started to get out of it a little bit, but not too much. Moved to California, surrounded by Laker fans. I fell in love with it again. And then I started to, because I didn't have a ton of people to talk to about it, I started writing these absurdly long message board posts on Real GM's message boards. And that got me noticed. They gave me a chance to write for the site. And then everything just kind of took off from there. Long story short, I did it kind of as a part-time job. Then that turned into almost a second full-time job for a while there. And then in 2020, 3 weeks before Rudy Gobert shut down the entire NBA season, I left a 20-year career with the Walt Disney Company to cover the NBA full-time. So my timing's impeccable on that. So I, we came through on the other side. Okay. I landed with Spot Track after that, doing all their salary stuff, a lot of roster transaction, salary cap analysis type work there. And now since then, Trevor and I linked up to do the NBA front office show, which we have a lot of fun with. And we started our own little writing project called the Basketball Bulletin, which our mutual friend Bryce Simon has been carrying for months as Trevor and I have been working through some other stuff that we've got going on. Bryce has really carried it. That's the quickest version as I think I can do of how we got here.
I mean, you just phenomenal work. I mean, anyone that's listened to you before, Keith, I mean, a lot of people know your story and I really love it, especially I was listening to the front office show. I think it was a couple days ago. It might even been last week where you were asked a similar question and you discussed how you kind of like took to the basketball world in the midst of COVID when there wasn't a lot of stuff to cover. And you actually broke out an article detailing how Disney could host the NBA bubble. And it was almost like you had a crystal ball. And like, because of your in-depth knowledge of the lay of the land at Disney, and obviously like how the basketball side of things could fit there, that really kind of puts you on the map as well.
Yeah, I was doing work with Yahoo Sports at the time, and I was working for Yahoo Sports and NBC Sports were my primary employers at that time, and we were like covering horse You remember everybody's like filming those horse competitions from their phone.
And it was like so bad. Mike Conley in his house on TV too.
It was such a
Pierce in a driveway, right? Like that.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, and everybody's like, how do these guys all not have their own gyms, right? And it's like, because they don't, right? So so that was a mess. So that was like what we were doing, and that's when people were, I think, really like, we need real sports back. Like, I need to watch games, and there was all this stuff of like, they should go to a private island. They should play games on cruise ships. They and like, I've been on cruises, and I was like, yeah, that's cool. Wave hits, and it's like, yo, bottles up. Oh, wave hit, and you missed, and you lose the final.
Balls in the ocean.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to be a thing. So I was like, this is nonsense. And then people were really pushing, like, well, they should do it in Vegas and shut down shut everything down and just do it there. And I was like, but Vegas is like a real city. So I started talking with my editor at Yahoo, who thankfully knows the Disney property well, like I do. And I was just like, hey, so I have this kind of idea, like, this is all my crazy stuff. Like, why don't we write about doing it at Disney? They have the hotel rooms, they have the Wild World of Sports, where they have all the gyms they could ever need. They could turn conference rooms into practice courts, all that stuff. And we put the article together, and I'll never forget, it posted on April 16th, 2020. And that afternoon, we got back an email from someone within the NBA that said, thanks for a thoughtful and thorough idea. And that was like all it said. And it was like, oh yeah, nothing else will come of it. But I think people enjoyed it, because people were like, hey, like, it's funny. The early responses to the tweets are like, how selfish of you. Like, we don't need sports and all this stuff. As the day went along, people were like, actually, maybe this could work. This is really interesting. And then it was like two-ish weeks later that it came out of like, hey, the NBA is maybe considering playing at Disney, and it got a whole second life and went crazy from there. So yeah, so that was a lot of fun. My two lives professionally will never intersect again like that in my life, or at least knock on wood. I hope there's no need for it to ever happen like that again.
When people kind of jump on the bubble era, or they're like, oh, that wasn't real, do you get defensive over it? Hey, actually, that was my idea. So why didn't you come up with something
better? No, because the Lakers won the title. So, of course, I'm like, yeah, that's not a real title. What idiot thought of that thing? You know, I don't really. I get defensive from the sense of, I think everything is a real title. I think every season comes with its own unique challenges. That was a whole different thing where, you know, a lot of guys talked about like how hard it was to get motivated in those games, because you had to, like, remember they put the fans on the video boards and stuff. And then you'd see like, eventually, invariably, somebody would do some really inappropriate crap, and then all of a sudden their square would go blank and stuff like that and things. So yeah, it was I don't get too defensive about it, but yeah, it is funny. To your point, Stephen, when we told that story on Front Office Show, we have a large subset of Lakers fans, because that's what Trevor does, that watch that show. And they're like, no way. Like, hey, thanks for the championship. And I'm like, oh God, I hope Boston wins this thing and it can just quiet this noise for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Boston winning it, man, I think it's pretty well known that you're a Boston Celtics fan, even though you're living in the heart of Magic Country. How does it feel to be, you know, people say world championship now because, you know, America is the world, so to speak. But how does it feel to be an NBA champion now?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people were like, hey, congratulations. And I don't really know how to respond to that. Like, I'm not on the team. Like, I just root for them. But in the end, like, just to keep it, I'm like, yeah, thanks. Like, it was really cool. I'm really happy for the guys. You know, having gotten to know a lot of people with the organization over the years, even though I was based here in Orlando, I covered the team from afar for a long time. And you'd run into people here in Orlando, run into people at various events around the league, usually summer league, but other things, G League Showcase, things like that. And it was great to see those folks and just really see some of them win. And then for the players, like, I had watched every game Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have played in their career. And because I covered them with Celtics Blog, where one of my things was, I did an article called The Takeaways, which was kind of a recap from the night before and just little plays that stood out to me. I watched most of those games twice. So even like 30-point blowouts, 30-point wins, like all those things, like, I've seen almost every game those guys have played twice in full. And it was so cool to see them finally break through and get it done. I was, you know, beyond fired up and excited, and it was neat. I know I was telling you guys, my daughter doesn't really like basketball all that much, But her and my wife did get super into the finals run and everything. And
that's awesome.
Screaming. And they were down watching in the other room because I like to – I get really weird about watching basketball. So isolate myself in a room where I can take my notes and do my thing on Twitter and all that stuff. But we were all having a lot of fun with it.
With the NBA sort of being a copycat league and with what you know about team building through all of your knowledge of the salary cap and things like that, now that the Celtics are on top of the NBA, and for a long time we saw teams sort of working toward that multi-star model, and now, not to say that like a lot of these guys couldn't, you know, be the second best player on a number of other teams or things like that, but how do you think other teams will try to replicate what the Celtics did this season, and do you think that's even replicable?
Yeah, it's going to be hard, and this is not me like Celtics are great and nobody can be better than them. I'm not trying to say it that way. But the reality is they drafted two all-star, all-NBA level wings several years ago, and very fortunate that those things went the way they did, that their careers have developed. I'm going to knock on wood a little bit here, but they've both been remarkably durable, especially Jason Tatum, throughout his career. So having those two guys just makes everything easier, right? And then it became, as Brad Stevens has talked about, finding the right mix around them to support and lift Brown and Tatum to where they always felt they could get. Now, one of the things that I always mention in this when we talk about this stuff is this year, if we rewind to almost a year ago, the league had the new CBA coming in. And one of the things that they do when they launch a new CBA is they will basically put it in a position where it becomes a, how do I phrase this? It's like a get your books in order kind of year, where it is, hey, don't try to do all these things that are, you know, if you need to shed salary, cause we're going to have these increased penalties and restrictions and all these things. Boston, Phoenix, Milwaukee, a couple other teams, but those three primarily, they went the other way, right? They were like, nah, let's load up. Last chance to do this. I would argue Boston did it more effectively than anybody else did. But you had to be in position to go get Porzingis. That trade ended up being what a massive win. They got, people forget now, they got two first-round picks in that trade, which they then turned and flipped in the Jrue Holiday trade. Later down the line, or at least one of those picks. And then Holiday landing in Portland, where Portland had no intentions of keeping him, and Boston was able to be in position to get it. Again, in part because the Porzingis trade fell apart, and they still had Malcolm Brogdon. So they were able to match salary that way. So you have to get really lucky. Sometimes that luck is like a year in advance that it puts things together for you, and it all kind of comes together, and then it's we have this saying around here. One of the soccer clubs my daughter used to be involved with is, success is where luck and preparation meet, right? Like that's the address where those two meet. And I think that's really kind of a key thing, because I think they prepared, they prepped for this moment for as long as they could. And then they got there, and then, a little bit of an easier run through the playoffs, not so many injuries on their side. And it is, I feel like it does get overlooked that Porzingis missed most of the playoff run. Yep. So that's a very long way of answering a very simple question. I think teams are going to try, but I think it's going to be extremely hard to pull it off, because I don't think, one, who has the base of the two young stars, who has the base of guys who are, they felt that pain of losing in the finals, so they use that to drive and push and motivate them to get the job finished. And who has the ability to load up? That's going to be the hardest part, is that last part, because everything in the new CBA now is almost all fully in. There's still a couple things that'll phase in next season, but almost all of the roster building stuff is fully in, and it's all designed around, don't do this. We don't want this to happen. And that's going to be really hard for teams to try to replicate.
For sure. Well, we appreciate that answer, and we're going to kind of stick with that sort of theme as well as the draft as a whole. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the other side.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Well, hey, everybody, welcome back from that break. Keith, I want to ask you now, I think that the last question that we covered about how to replicate what Boston did, I think that the draft is going to be one of the main ways, like a tent pole, and how teams are going to be able to kind of replicate that moving forward. We cover the draft year round here, but I'm always a little curious to kind of get the opinion of the draft coverage for people who cover the NBA as well. This year's draft has been labeled as bad by a lot of people, to put it bluntly. Some people refer to it as a flat class. With the amount of time that you've put in and study in this class, and maybe even just some of the coverage that you've heard elsewhere, what is your opinion overall of this year's class?
Yeah, I do think it is flat. I think that is fair. There's obviously, I'm not breaking any news, obviously, to you two or anybody who's watching or listening. There's no Wembanyama. There's no Zion. There's no AD. There's not a player like that in this class. I mean, we're 4 days away or 3 days out, and we still don't really even have any real locked in idea who the number one overall pick is. That's even rare and sometimes in a bad draft, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I think, but I'm not as down on it as other people are. I think there's good depth in this draft. And I think sometimes what happens in these drafts is, I like to call them, they become beauties in the eye of the beholder draft, where I think that can make it really interesting, because then I think you have teams like, you may have a team that's like, you know what, we love Donovan Clingan, and if he's there at three, we're going to move heaven and earth to trade up to get him, right? We're going to try to get there. And then somebody else might be like, you know, the guy we really like is player X and he's really sliding. Maybe we can actually move back a pick and go get him, or a couple picks or whatever it may be. So I think that becomes a far more interesting draft. And sometimes I feel like we lock into these and it's like, man, we could have read the mock draft 3 months ago. We could have just done this and been done already, right? Because they're kind of nailing most things. I think this has the potential to be a really fun draft like that. And I will say this. I started hearing last year, prepping for the draft, how bad this class was going to be. You know, people, feels like people have been talking about it for a while. And one of the things that that led me to do was, all right, I'm probably not going to see a ton of these guys on TV, probably not going to see a lot of this. I knew it was a top of the draft, might be a lot of European players. So I put a lot of time and effort into trying to prep for this draft. And I finally hit a spot where I've given up some other responsibilities that I had. So by moving those off my plate, I basically turned most of that into draft prep time. So I feel like I'm like now I want to say, I don't remember the exact number, but I think I'm like 73 players deep on like full scouts. That's awesome. That I feel really good about and those kind of things. Normally at this time, I'm lucky if I'm like 35 or 40 in, and I'm like cramming like for the test in the last like couple weeks. I'm relying on stuff that I'm reading from the draft experts I really, you know, admire and follow and trust. I'm like binging podcasts left and right to catch up. And I feel like I'm in a much better place this year than I usually am, which is kind of funny because people are like, this is the draft you spend all this time on. But in a lot of ways, I feel like it was time better spent than like,
sure,
oh, cool, Cooper Flagg and Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper and, you know, X, Y, and Z. Yo, okay, cool. I think we'll all know those names by Christmas next year.
So 100%. We're going to get to some of your kind of deeper cuts now that you have been so deep in the weeds this year later on. But I just kind of want to tease this one out a little bit here first. We did see some rookies that were really meaningful to their teams this season that were good teams. Derek Lively, obviously, you know, playing on a finals team. Ben Shepherd playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. A guy like Jaime Jaquez being an important contributor for the Heat. Are there any guys that you see in this class that you think will have sort of an easy time acclimating and kind of be able to slide right in?
This class coming up, you mean?
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a handful of guys I think that are going to be like in there that I feel like have a chance to be more. I like to think of them like immediate contributors. Like a lot of people, I think, go to older players in that case. And some of them may be that. Like I think a guy like Dalton Connect should be fairly plug and play for a lot of teams. He may struggle a little bit with his defense early on. I think the speed of the NBA game is going to be a little bit much for him, but I think he'll figure it out. And again, for any player I mention, it always, for me, fit matters more than almost anything else. Like if a guy lands in a bad spot, it almost doesn't matter how good he is, unless they're like a transcendent player. But if a player who's they're kind of like I like them, but I'm not super high, landed in a great spot, they can pick way up. So he's one of the guys I really like. I think Zach Edey is a guy who can step in. I think a guy like Devin Carter is going to be able to come in. I think a couple of things that those guys bring is they've Edey's obviously huge. He's older. I think a team will keep it very simple for him. And then Devin Carter's dad played in the league for like a decade or more. So I think that transition is almost a little easier for him because he kind of knows a little bit more what to expect. Plus he's a New England kid. So I got to shout that out from Providence. So that you'll see, I may have a couple biases that creep in on a couple guys and that might be one or two. I think Reed Sheppard's another guy because I think there's a projectable skill there with the shooting where if a team says, just shoot, like that's all we need you to do, be a shooter, score in year one, those kind of things I think help. So I think guys like that will pick up. And then there's some older players later. Like I think a kid like Tristan Newton could come in and maybe not have the super huge upside of a lot of other guys, but he might be able to come in and give you 10 minutes a night as a backup and not be completely overwhelmed. Whereas like a guy like Nikola Topic or Rob Dillingham, it may, especially with a guy like Dillingham who played kind of, you know, that weird Kentucky deal where their guards play on and off the ball and they don't run traditional stuff all that much. He may come in and have a lot of struggles in year one and people may be like, man, we should have just taken Tristan Newton, which is like, that's crazy talk, but that may be how it looks just at least early on.
Yeah, I mean, the draft is full of those types of stories where this guy was uber productive, like a Tristan Newton, like back-to-back champions, like played a key cog, and that was effective on both sides of the ball for that team. And he's not topping a lot of big boards. I mean, even mine included, I'll raise my hand up. But, you know, we miss on these players all the time. Keith, one thing that I'm really interested in knowing, and maybe some fans are too, is how important is it, or maybe not important, but advantageous. Like maybe this isn't like on the top of a team's list of to do, but how advantageous is it to get like second round draft picks correct? You know, especially now with like this tiered apron approach, like how advantageous is it for these teams, like Toronto picking 31st overall? What's the significance of getting that pick correct?
Yeah, massive. If you can nail the draft, you have 3 to 4 years of controllable, cost-effective talent. Meaning you decide if you're going to have them or not because they're on either the rookie scale with the option years, or if they're in the second round, it's either non-guaranteed years or the or option years at the end as more and more teams use that new second round pick exception. We jokingly call it the Rob Pelinka rule on front office show because he repeatedly like was only signing his second round picks to 2-year deals using the minimum exception. And we're like, carve out like an extra little bit of your, you know, non-taxpayer MLE and sign these guys longer. Cause it turned into like every year is like losing good players or running the risk of it. But yeah, those are huge because you use the Raptors at 31. If you're the Raptors, right, you're going to re-sign Emmanuel Quickley this summer. You're going to extend Scottie Barnes on a max deal. You're going to get expensive pretty quickly. If you can, no pun intended. if you can have a player that you draft at 31, or even they do have a first rounder because they have Indiana's pick, or with your first rounder, you're in a spot where if you can get two rookies who can come in and give you minutes, those guys are going to come in and give you good minutes for like $5 million combined over their first couple years. That's huge because that potentially does one of two things. It either frees you up if you have cap space to go do something else and sign a player, or if you don't ever have the cap space route, it might free up the full mid-level exception, or it might just keep you out of those really tough trade restrictions as an apron team. So it's really important, more so than ever, I think, for teams if they want to push into being contenders, which generally means being fairly expensive, to really be in a position where you are nailing your draft picks. And I'll also say, I think it's going to put even more pressure if you completely blow one in the top like 4 or 5. That's always a bad thing. But if you blow one now, you're really in rough shape because you might have really missed. Not only did you miss out on a generational talent potentially, but you might have missed out on a cost-controlled generational talent as it came in. So that's where I think there's a lot more pressure. And in a draft class like this one in particular, owners and stuff and a lot of fans, they don't want to hear flat draft, not a good draft. They just want to know, hey, if I'm handing this kid, it doesn't matter that, you know, nobody thinks he's number one on my personal board. Alex Saar is as good as Victor Wembanyama. But guess what? Alex Saar is getting handed more money than Victor Wembanyama did. That's just the way the salary cap works with all this stuff. So he's going to make more money than Wemby did, even though it's like nobody cared. But if I'm the Hawks owner, at some point somebody's going to be like, hey, wait a minute, explain this to me. Why are we paying this kid more? And that's where, you know, hopefully the front office is like, all right, let's get into it again. Let me explain the salary cap to you and those kind of things. But it can be really tough.
So to kind of tie into that, how do you think with regard to the second apron, it's going to change how teams approach the draft when it comes to player development and risk tolerance? Because I understand, obviously, you need to take big bites at the apple to build a contending team and things like that. We mentioned the Celtics. If you don't swing on Jaylen Brown, you're not where you are now. But conversely, are there going to be teams that maybe played a little bit safer on that note, especially when you get to the second round, rather than taking more developmental swings? What do you think the ripple effects of that are going to be?
Yeah, I think it's very highly dependent, right? I think if you're a team that is really good and you have your 8-man playoff rotation mostly in place, you could take more of an upside play on a kid where we could develop him over the next couple of years. And as one of those members of the eight-man rotation slides out, we slide the kid in for him and we're ready to go. If you are a very good team, but you only have like 5 or 6 guys in place, you may want the older, maybe more, a little bit more ready to go right now player that can slide right in and give you some minutes day one in your rotation. So that's where I think it becomes dependent. I think when you're talking the high lottery teams, teams 1 through 7, 8, 9, 10, depending on the draft, that's always going to be, you pick the best player, the most upside, and you run with it. Cause you shouldn't be messing around there. Like, even if you are, like Boston was when they drafted Jason Tatum, they were coming off an Eastern Conference Finals appearance with the number one overall pick. We all know they turned around and traded that straight back to 3, but you could not there be like, well, you know, we're really close. Let us overdraft this, you know, 5th-year senior out of BYU who's been on 3 Mormon missions and he's 27, right? Let's get that kid in the door because he's ready to go day one. If you do that, you're in a really tough spot. You have to be really smart about the way you do it. So when you're that high, you're still going. That's all. Go get the best players. Go with it that way. But I think as you get a little later, you come out of the lottery, latter part of the first round, second round, you could start to really make it more, a little more team dependent on, all right, we have real rotation minutes we need to fill. Because here's the other part. If you're that expensive, you're not signing free agents. You're not making big trades. So the best way to fill those minutes and fill them long term is through the draft. The second best way is going to be playing like the Suns did. You play veteran minimum lottery where it is, let's sign 10 dudes to the minimum and hope 2 or 3 of these tickets cash and work out for us.
Then in the case of like a Drew Eubanks, they opt out of their player option and now they're on the free agency market. And now one of the players that did kind of do well, now you have to kind of replace that spot as well. Keith, we're going to get into what's going to be my favorite part of the show soon, where we get into some of your kind of like a sleeper prospects. As you could tell, the name of the show is Draft Sickos. We love talking like all prospects. The last question that I have for you before we get into your guys is, now that the draft is going to be 2 days, I'm two-part question here, Keith. One, how do you feel about the draft being 2 days? And then two, how do you expect that 2-day approach to maybe impact like the trade market?
Yeah, but answer your second half of that question first. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see, because as we all know, in the old world, you finish the first round, the commissioner switches out with, you know, Adam Silver gets done being booed for the night, and Mark Tatum comes out, gets all the cheers, because it's like everybody loves the backup quarterback, right? And then he kicks off the second round, and then it's like pick. Right. And you're like, that's why Jokic gets drafted during a Taco Bell commercial, right? Because it's like, can't keep up. I think the pause is going to do 2 things. The pause is going to be great because I think it's going to give teams a chance to reset. I've talked to teams who, if they have a late first round pick, not that they didn't know a guy was on the board and they're like, oh man, like we missed out on that guy, we really screwed up, but more of a, okay, that guy's still left, he's somebody we really liked with the 28th pick. Maybe we need to try to trade up to 32 to get him in those sorts of things. Like that becomes almost a chance for everybody to breathe and reset. I think too, you're going to see teams come out of night one with, don't really love the way that went, but we still like a couple guys. Let's try to rebound here in the second night. I think having the second round picks be a little spread out too gives you a little bit more time. A lot of people don't know this in draft rooms. So we're all watching the draft the same way the teams are, with Woj and Shams and others tweeting out the picks. So let's say there is Woj tweets out, the Detroit Pistons have traded this pick to the Boston Celtics. A lot of people think the NBA has like some backdoor system or something where the teams can be, who actually has this pick? They don't, because those trades aren't official. So every single team assigns somebody on their staff, might be an intern. Maybe they don't trust it to an intern. It's going to be somebody with a little more heft. They update the draft board constantly, because the last thing, you don't have time in the second round. Hey, let's call Detroit to try to trade for the pick.
Yeah,
I don't have that pick. We traded to Boston. Aren't you following Woj? What's wrong with you? Turn your notifications on. Like, what are you doing? They'll all have a screen up in their war room where it's just the reporters' tweets flowing in. And they're not looking for, like, how did they like our pick? They're just follow this. Who has this pick? What's going on here? Who's coming off the board? And those kind of things. So that's where I think just slowing it down a little bit is going to help everybody, because then you get into, all right, let's call them. Let's see what they do. And it has to be, I can't tell you how many folks in front offices I've talked to where it's the assistant GM is working it out with the other assistant GM. And they're like, all right, we're there. And then they hand the phone off to the main guy. The main guy's like, I actually just traded the pick to somebody else. So, you know, throw that away, or no, tell them no, or throw it on the board. We'll get back to them. And it's like, we can't get back to them. They need to know now,
because no time.
They're ready to make the pick. I think just slowing everything down is going to change it. The first part of your question, I'm really mixed. I'm excited to see what it looks like, because it's different. I'm okay with trying almost anything new. I don't think it's going to hurt anything by any means. I'm a little bummed out because the second round was like appropriate for your show. Who are the sickos, man? Mm-hmm. Who's still here at midnight watching the 55th pick in the draft? Some guy who's probably going to be on a two-way contract. And invariably there's somebody out there who's like, I like this kid. This kid can play. He might be a rotation guy sooner rather than later. Trace Jackson Davis type, somebody like that, where, you know, there were people out there like, this guy should have been drafted 30 picks ago. You know, now he's going to play, you know, for the Warriors and things like that. I'm going to miss that part of it. Same reason I missed the midnight opening to free agency. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, who are the people with problems? Like
that are up the diehards
on the East Coast. Right. And they're living for this. You know, and I even go back to the days when it was like, refresh the message board. Cause there was like, hey, I just heard, you know, this Woj guy, I don't even really know who he is, but he's on the radio here in New York talking about this is happening, you know, cause there was no Twitter back then, right? Or ESPN's running a live page, you know, but back then internet pages took a minute to refresh. So you're like hitting that thing. And then invariably you shut your whole computer down. It's a mess. But yeah, I love that. So that part of it I miss, but in the end, I think it's going to be a really good change. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern time, is a little weird after talking about, we want more focus on the second round. We want people to really care. So we put it on when most people are still at work. My personal sleep schedule, I'm all about it. Cause I usually come out of that second round with my cap sheets a disaster. And I'm like, I don't even remember who had what picks. Let me update all this stuff. So the fact that it'll all be wrapped up around 7 or 8, that part I am looking forward to a little bit.
For sure. I love that personally, cause I was doing undrafted free agent roundup column. So I'm hoping it's like, it'd be great if like a slew of two ways come out by like 10 PM on Thursday. And like, I've got
most of 2:30 in the morning
Monday. Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
So we're going to take one more quick break here. And then on the other side, we're going to talk about some of Keith's favorite players in this draft that are sliding a little bit under the radar. Stick with us. All right. So you dropped a piece in the basketball bulletin. It was a list of your guys. We love the our guys format on this show. We do it every single year. And you kind of split it into guys that are likely to be drafted and players that you feel should be first round picks. We're not going to dig into all of them, and we'd encourage you to go over to Basketball Bulletin in general. Everything there is fantastic. I'm in there every day, so I'm a fan of it personally, but subscribe if you haven't already. But we're going to get into some of the guys that you mentioned that we're quite interested in also. One guy that stood out to me is someone I've been on for a couple years here, Dylan Jones out of Weber State, 6'8", or I'm sorry, 6'4", sort of forward wing with a big body and a long wingspan, really versatile skill set. Talk us through Dylan Jones and your interest in his game.
Yeah, he kind of came on my radar in a little bit of a weird way. I was watching one of those early season tournaments and it was just one of those things where it was like, all right, I want to say it was maybe I might be romanticizing this, so I apologize if I do have this wrong, and somebody goes and finds the box score in the time. But 2 years ago, I feel like they played in one of those, and it was like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time. And I remember they were playing Colorado State, and I think it was a tournament. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But he played really well, and I was like, "Ooh, this kid's interesting." He had a bunch of rebounds. As you guys get to know me and more people know, if you're a guard or a wing that rebounds, I'm in 100% in. I think it shows toughness. I think it shows a drive for the ball. I think it shows just a knack of understanding spacing and timing and a lot of stuff that are translatable skills to other parts of the game. But he had a bunch of rebounds. He scored some points. He had some shots. And I just made a note. What I'll do is, if a kid pops for me, I'll make a note. Sometimes they don't go anywhere, because then it's like, yeah, that was a one-time thing. Other times it is, all right, here it goes. And as I would check in on him the rest of that year, it was like, kind of interesting. This year I thought it was really cool. Weber State put the ball in his hands a lot and kind of said, run our offense. Like, you can kind of – he's not – I don't think at the NBA he's going to be a point guard. I think he's going to be a wing. I don't know that he's the foot speed to break guys down off the dribble, especially opposing point guards. But I do think he can be a secondary playmaker for a team where you could throw it out to him. I think he'll drive closeouts as long as he's hitting shots well enough. Again, I love his size. I think he's like a legit 6'6" or so, or seems to be. Sometimes the mid-major guys can get a little tricky with that. So you get in the combine measurements. This whole without shoes stuff drives me so crazy. Without shoes, like, what are we doing with that? And I get it, because they're trying to make it, you know, a baseline for everybody. But I really like him. I think he can really play. I think there's a chance, you know, as long as he shoots it, that's going to be the big thing. I probably a third year guy in the NBA by the time he really pops. But I think if he goes to the right team that focuses on development, maybe a team that has a strong G League system, I think you could see this kid turn into a real rotation player.
Yeah, for sure. We're big Dylan Jones fans on No Ceilings at Large. Our guy Corey has interviewed him a few times, and nothing but solid reports on not only him as a basketball player, but him as a person. Keith, one guy that you put on there, you said that you did it unbiasedly. I know that you're from the area, but Quentin Post out of Boston College. I have no ties to the Boston area, but I can tell you I'm a big fan of him as well. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing him earlier in the year, and just really nice, terrific young man to get to know and talk to. I think, Keith, that his game, it just screams modern NBA. Like, I even think that he's more athletic than what people are even giving him credit for. Agreed. I mean, when we're talking about, like, the modern big man, I think he kind of fits that to a T. What are you seeing when you're watching Quentin Post?
Yeah, I think people see big, tall, white kid, and instantly it's he can only play drop coverage, right? Like, that's where everybody goes to. And I think that's people – I've heard people, like, people who I actually respect, not necessarily draft people, but NBA people, say, like, that about Donovan Clingan, which to me is just crazy. But if you go to Quentin Post, he can move his feet a little bit. He's not going to be out there. He's not Al Horford when he was in his prime, switching on to point guards and destroying him. Like, that's not going to happen. But I think he can play in a hedge and recover system. I think he can play if like, let's say he somehow landed with the Knicks. I think Tibbs wants to ice everything. I think he could do that. I think he can play in drop coverage. I thought the best thing for him as a senior at BC was his timing got so much better on shot blocks. His first few years, he was just a foul machine. For original was just because he jumped at everything, like a lot of young players do. Then it was he just wasn't real quick off his feet, and he'd get caught, and he'd get a piece of the ball, but a lot of the body, and make kind of a mess of it. So now I thought as a senior, he did a really nice job with that. Offensively, he has really nice touch. He's going to shoot the three. Yep. He's going to be a stretch five, I think, in the pro level when he gets there. But he's got really nice touch. He's a pretty good finisher around the basket area. Not super strong, but just he kind of knows how to use his body. He gets good position on guys. It sounds funny because his name is Post. Didn't play in the post a lot because it's just not the way BC ran their offense. But when he did get post duck-ins and things like that, I always thought he did a nice job of positioning. I think the worst thing college bigs do, I feel like they're all like, I got to mash you in the goal. And instead, like, he did a nice job of, like, I'll turn, I'll face, I'll shoot it off the window and bank it in there. So as long as he holds up defensively, I think he can be an NBA player. Again, year two, year three, solid backup center in that kind of range and go from there. But, yeah, there's definitely a little bit of bias in there for me because I'm a BC guy. But I really like his game.
Well, I'll back you up on it because I was texting with Steven about this the other day. We just submitted our final boards. I actually put him in the guaranteed contract second round tier.
I love it.
I think he's a phenomenal shooter, over 40% from 3 2 years in a row, great from the free throw line, and a guy who measured really well, which, like, that's going to go a long way if you have concerns about the feet. The fact that he's got a near 7'5" rather wingspan, I think it's going to help quite a bit. I'm a big fan of him, how he sees the floor and the shot, of course. We had two other guys he wanted to touch on with you real quick, if you've got the time.
Yeah.
One is a guy that I've struggled with. I acknowledge that he's really talented. I'm just a little curious as to what you think it looks like on an NBA floor. Oso Iguodala.
My favorite.
So talk me through Oso a little bit here.
He's my favorite. He's my favorite player in the entire class.
Wow.
I just love him. I fell in love with his defense the first time I ever saw him play. He was 3 years ago when he was a sophomore. Just the way he moved at his size, I was like, this guy's going to be an NBA defender day one. You like every once in a while you can see who he reminded me of, the way he moves defensively, is Jonathan Isaac. Because Jonathan Isaac, I never saw a kid so big move his feet so seamlessly, so smoothly, moved like a guard out there. And I remember a play. This is a quick Isaac tangent here, but his rookie year, very first game, they played the Miami Heat. I was there covering the game as media, sitting right on the baseline. Goran Dragic loved the dribble under the Nash dribble,
right?
Go under, and then he would either spin dribble back and get a layup or turn and shoot a fadeaway. Tried the spin dribble, Isaac's there. He went to the fadeaway, Isaac's there. The look on Goran Dragic's face was like, I should probably just retire because I have no idea what the hell to do with this. I don't even know. And I started to that day. It never caught on, but I was like, we should nickname this kid the pterodactyl because he just blocks out the sky with these arms. And he's everywhere. And there's just no blue sky. I see similar type things with Iguodala. He doesn't have quite the same like super duper wingspan, I don't think, as Isaac did. I'd have to check that so that you guys could fact check.
It was 6'11" for the wingspan.
Yeah, but he moves his feet so well. The guy who I've been comparing him to, I talked about him a couple minutes ago, is Trayce Jackson-Davis. I think there's a lot of comparables there as far as the way they play. He's a really good passer. Day one for a big, that doesn't usually happen. Or we don't see that. I don't know that he's ever going to step out and shoot the ball enough to play the four, where, you know, that seems to be where everybody kind of wants to push these guys to. But I think defensively, passing, I think his finishing is really good. I like this year, he developed a little floater, a little touch shot in the paint. I love him. So you guys know I'm a Boston guy. If it came up, Boston took him at 30th, I'd be over the moon. I'd be so excited. He's my favorite player in the entire class.
I love that. I love that you're staking your claim to your guy. I think that we're actually, Maxwell, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Corey is about to link up and potentially.
Yes. There's something in the works with Oso and Corey for sure.
Love it.
Yeah. So that's.
Did you see the video somebody put out? I only saw snippets of it today where he like broke down NBA coverages like off of one view of a play. If you guys want to take a break and go get a sandwich, I'll go for like another hour with those thoughts. Like, I love him.
Sandwich sounds good. Sandwich sounds good. I like that you like Oso. And just to be transparent, Keith, we're getting to know each other. I'm having a lot of fun. We're not the biggest Oso guys, but I feel like It's good, I though.
Appreciate you right? having me. Have a good night.
Yeah, see you later. Yeah. No, but in all honesty, I feel like sometimes we can, like we, I'll say like the royal we, like as the draft community, mm-hmm. we can get so like paralysis by analysis. And sometimes mm-hmm. we spend like too much time looking at these guys. And there's no denying that Oso has NBL level skill set. So I don't know, when I hear people who I consider to be like way more intelligent than I am, like seeing praises, I feel like I got to go back and look at them. But Keith, last guy we want to ask you
must
about.
Have heard that from somebody else, because I don't know that I'm way more intelligent than anybody. I will say this one thing, just my general philosophy.
Yeah.
I think we collectively, and I'm as guilty of this as other people, we overfocus on things that guys can't do.
Yes.
Versus mm. getting excited about the things they can do. Like it's it, we like Oso, I hear all the time, he can't shoot. Like I like what's he gonna do if a team gets him out on the perimeter? What, they're just gonna sag off him, he won't be able to play and all this stuff. And right now, obviously, because Boston won, we're in this extreme five out fascination love yeah. fest of everybody needs to be able to play five out, and that'll
OKC too, right?
And then it'll go mm-hmm, away. Yeah. Yeah, so I just that's just a philosophy I have on evaluating players, is I try not to lose sight on all the wonderful things a player can do, it, because I get overly focused on the things they can't do. I can be fairly pessimistic at times on a lot of stuff, which is weird. People are always like, you're like the happiest, like you just love this stuff so mm-hmm. much. And it's true, like this is my happy place is basketball, but I can get a little pessimistic on things. So I have to be very conscious of, don't over-focus on that. I have mm-hmm. to kind of remind myself of that. And that's, I tend to do that more though with the top prospects.
Sure.
Or like I will like, I'll get a little too much of like, I don't know about this, you know, mm-hmm. with this. And then sometimes I end up completely missing because I spend too much time on that.
I think that's such a great point. Yeah. And like something I like to do personally when I make my boards is I always just include a thing under every player. Like, does he have something that makes him special?
Yeah.
And like, it can be anything. Like we talked about Quinn Post, and it's like, that's, he's an outlier shooter for a guy yep. coming into the draft, even if he's, you know, 24 years old or, you know, not the fastest, he's got something. And that's true with Oso as well. Like his assist rate and assist to turnover, like last year too, was like something you see once every 7 or 8 years coming out of college for a guy that size.
And he's not just running DHOs, right? Like, cause anybody right. should be able to do that. Like they run a lot of fake DHOs. I think Marquette actually runs a pretty sophisticated system. Cause love I think Marquette, they're kind of, yeah. you know, they I think their expectation is our guys are going to play at the next level so we can introduce more stuff to them. And I think they ran a lot of stuff with him. He's a good passer on the short roll. That's been evident for a couple of years. I like this year too. They put the ball on him a couple times. He broke bigs down off the dribble and made passes off the bounce, which mm-hmm. that you just don't see. That's a trait from bigs. That's pretty rare that you can do that. But let's move on. Otherwise, I'm going to be sitting here the rest of the night talking to no one.
I mean, this is draft sickos, Keith. So I mean, yeah. we can wax poetic on all these guys who probably aren't going to be lottery level talents. But I want to bring up AJ Mitchell because I feel like this could be like the most obvious mistake on a lot of people's boards, and I feel like even mine included. Like I was listening to Sam Vecenie actually just had him on as like a sleeper prospect on Game Theory, and just listening to him like break down his game and like how he interprets the defense and like how he responds to what's presented before him, things like that. He's obviously like a super sharp young man. Why are you so in on him?
Yeah, I think the way I described him when I wrote about him, he's kind of funky a little bit. Like he just has a little bit of herky jerkiness to his game. He plays a little, I already said I like players who rebound at the guard position a lot. I also like players who play with really good personal pace. Like that's something that's really become like a thing for me, especially with ball handlers, mm-hmm. where if they want to play fast, they play fast. If they want to play slow, they play slow. Sometimes it's the same. They may hit half court at 100 miles an hour and then slow to a crawl as they hit the paint. I think he plays with that kind of pace. You can see, too, the influence of having played professionally over in Europe, even if it wasn't mm-hmm. the highest levels. Like, you can just see that influence in his game, that he has that sense. I think he does a good job of taking and absorbing contact for a guy his age. A lot of times guards, I feel like, they just get their contact and then they're in the third row. And it's like, all right, you know, what, like, What's that going to do? Because you're not getting the call in the NBA, and two, now you're completely out of the play. I think he does a good job of finishing through contact. And what we got me super excited monitoring him this year was the big jump in shooting. Now, I'm always wary when that happens to a kid, especially one who's like, now they're kind of on the draft radar and those kind of things. I make it the equivalent of the contract year in the NBA. Yep. And it's like, is this real? Like, is this shooting real? But why I feel confident in it, he's been a pretty good free throw shooter throughout the course of his college career. And he's not one of these kids who hit 85% on one attempt per game.
Yeah.
Like, he shot four, five free throws per game the last couple of years. So I think he's got really good size for the position. I think he will be a point guard. It's funny. I've had a couple people say, I don't know, I see a little bit of Killian Hayes in him, which I think is a little unfair. And I think that's making a regional comp that doesn't really fit for me with that. But I mean, maybe it could go that way, but this, you know, like we said, these are the guys we're kind of planting a flag on and saying that they really like them. I do worry about him a little bit defensively. Nothing stands out as like, oh my gosh, this is a super standout skill for him, but nothing also screamed like, holy cow, this guy's a traffic cone either. So I really do like him quite a bit.
Yeah, and again, it's just like the vision. I think he's doing a lot of testing at the P3 in Santa Barbara, which is like where he conveniently played basketball. He's saying that he's getting a lot of like movement comps to like a Jalen Brunson, and I feel like that really shows up in his D-cell game and like that herky-jerky kind of pace that you were speaking to, Keith. I love that. These are great. Like, Maxwell, we got to get Keith on again at some point, maybe even next cycle, and we can just wax poetic on some of these deep sleepers.
For sure. Well, Keith, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the precipice of the draft, especially on the team building and cap front, because it's something that we don't really get to dive into as much. We're often so deep in the weeds on the prospects. I think it's important to kind of take a look at, hey, what are the actual implications of where a team is drafting and how that informs the philosophy that we should have as analysts and the philosophies that teams should have. So thank you so much for that. Can you just give everybody a quick rundown? If they somehow know about the Draft Sicko show but don't know about Keith Smith, where can
let me say one quick thing too, because I'd be remiss if I didn't do it. Our mutual buddy, Bryce Simon. I love Bryce. You know, Bryce has opened my eyes to a lot of guys, made me think differently about a lot of players in this class, really helped me refine a lot of things, helped me put focus on the right guys too. A guy we didn't talk about here, and I'm sure you guys have already dove into him because he's not exactly a secret, but Bryce has been on Daron Holmes the second from like day one of how good this kid's going to be. I'm all in on him as well. He's going to be an outstanding NBA player. So I just wanted to shout out him and shout out Daron Holmes, because I think he's going to be really, really good. Bryce, for my work, Bryce is great, man. He's just like you guys, like he loves this, right? And this is like so much, and you know, he's deep into it, and he covers the Pistons, so we better know a lot of draft guys.
He's a real sicko.
Yeah he is. Yeah, absolutely.
It's watch funny every Detroit Pistons game, there's got to be something a little bit wrong with you.
Right,
mentally off kilter.
I'll tell you, I've yet to hit Bryce with a player where he's like, I don't really know him very much. Until the other night, I was like, what do you think about Quinn Ellis? Because I started hearing Quinn Ellis's name more and more and more. And then he was like, he's like, I don't know, let me do a little bit of work. In like 20 minutes, he's like, all right, so I watched some of this stuff with him. And then like we proceeded to, I think we were watching probably a lot of the same things and having like a 30-minute conversation about this guy. And it's so funny. And it's like, it's so great now too that like if you have the resources – with like four clicks, it can be like, show me everything that I need to see about this one player if you want to put the work in. When I was a kid, like I was taping Steve Nash games in the middle of the night at Santa Clara because I was like a smallish ball handler. I sucked. I was a terrible player. All I could do is shoot and pass. I never learned how to dribble very well. So, but I had this dream of like, I'm going to be Steve Nash. And like, so I'm taping games at 1:30 in the morning on the East Coast, and then watching them after school the next day. And it's like, now it's like, click, click, click. There's there's every pick and roll possession the guy's ever had in his life from the time he was 7 years old. It's incredible. To answer your question, You can find my written work at spottrack.com. Mostly there. It's we're deep in off-season stuff right now. So I've got 29 of 30 off-season previews posted. The Boston Celtics will post tomorrow. The champions always are the last ones posted during the week. A lot of salary cap stuff up there. I'm part of the team that sources and maintains all the salary cap information on the site. I truly believe we are the most accurate and timely public information for salary data. And if you're fans of other sports, football, baseball, hockey, anything else, I think we've got you pretty well covered, including international soccer, individual sports. The guys do an incredible job over there with everything. I'm very fortunate to be part of it. Like, that, I have found my people, right? It's like, oh, you guys love this stuff like I do? Let's go. So that's where you find my written work. You can find me on NBA Front Office Show with Trevor Lane, where we do our show every day, Monday through Friday. We'll have some oddly timed shows here because it's free agency coming up. We're also doing something new called Front Office Overtime, which is just me going live. And I'm just doing shorter shows, 15, 20, 25 minutes. We'll see, maybe 30, depending on how many questions come in. But it's all Q&A stuff. People have cap questions or free agency questions or whatever they want to talk about. But we have a lot of fun. Every Friday is a live show on Front Office Show with Trevor and I. We call it Front Office Friday. We have a lot of fun. It gets a
great
little
intro for that show too. I love it. Front Office Friday. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that was just one day I was super excited to talk basketball with my buddy, and I just opened the show yelling. We have a lot of fun with that, man. We have a blast over there doing all that stuff with that. We'll have live shows for free agency where we go live. Usually it's later in the early hours of the morning on the East Coast, but late in the evening. So if you want to see Trevor and I a little punchy reacting to everything that happened, we do that. And we will also be live for the draft. We cover it a lot more from the NBA side, necessarily the deep prospect side, but Sean Davis, who's very up to par on a lot of these draft prospects, will be joining Trevor and I as well. And we'll be spending a lot of time breaking down everything that happens throughout the first round of the draft. We're still deciding second round. I think second round, we may not go live. We might just do a reaction show later, but yeah, a lot of stuff coming with that. And then the basketball bulletin as well. That was Trevor and I's little Substack project that we started. And Bryce wanted a place to put some written content on the draft. And he has 100% carried us over the last few months. He's got great player profiles out there, a million notes on these guys. He's, I don't know, 40 some odd players deep. So if you're just an average fan trying to learn a little bit about the draft, go to the basketball bulletin. You subscribe there. If you want to read more of my guy's piece, that's in there where I went through, I think it was like 7-8 players and, you know, somewhat level of detail on them. But yeah, we have a lot of fun. This is the best time of year.
Yeah. Yeah. All the work is fantastic. I mean, Steven talked about the Front Office Show. The basketball bulletin is spectacular. And you mentioned those like scouting reports that Bryce sends out. And something I love about those is when he does like the raw notes where like, they'll just like, it's so encouraging as an evaluator to see someone just like ask a question and their notes and be like, can this guy go left? Like, I have not seen him go left and whatever. Like, it's a really good, I would almost say like way to learn scouting if you're new to it. To see like, here's somebody who's deep in the weeds. Here's what they're looking at when they're going through.
I like sometimes too, he asks the question, then he answers it later.
Yeah.
Like he'll be like, he cannot go left. Like, he tried and he ended up kicking it into the seats or whatever. And it's like, it's really good stuff. And I think, it's very consumable too, which is really important to me as someone who needs to be like if I'm going to read a lot of this stuff, it needs to be consumable, you know, for me. I can't necessarily read everybody's, you know, 10,000 word deep dive on one player. Like I'm not going to have time.
Wow.
I just can't keep up.
Yeah.
Right.
We get it.
It's just, there's a lot. And, you know, you guys, I'll tell you guys, I wasn't super familiar, the old chat board. I wasn't familiar with your game. But like when I get turned on to the work you guys do, like I regularly watch the show, tune in, like I've been keeping up, with the work you guys do a great job. And I think you approach it too with a good mindset of having some fun with it, which is really important to me. Like this is, I get it. It's serious. We're making multi-million dollar decisions, but we're not making them. So let's have a little bit of fun with it, right? Like, I think you guys do a wonderful job.
For sure. And I think your point too, it's easy to get pessimistic with these guys. Because at the end of the day, like sometimes I'll drive myself a little crazy. I'm like, I'm spending all this time on, you know, 200 deep when, you know, maybe 20 of these guys are going to stick around. But I think it's important to keep that mindset of like, hey, this is a celebration. These guys get to sign an NBA contract. That's a lifelong dream. Like, just keep that mindset and keep it healthy.
So. The G League's getting more and more important too.
Yes, yeah.
And it's important to know where guys are going to come from. So over on SpotTrack, I wrote about at the time there were 217 potential NBA free agents this summer. I wrote something about all 217 of them, including the two-way guys. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is they matter. They're on rosters. Yep. So they may be on rosters again. So I spend a lot of time. And again, if you have the resources to do it, all of the information you ever could want for all these guys is there. It's almost like fun when I'm like, oh, this game's not there. Like how this game doesn't show up anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that tends to be like some guy over in Europe who played like some third division friendly. And it's like,
yeah,
not there, you idiot. Like it was his mom taped it off her cell phone. Like, that's why, you know, but it's like, yeah, I get almost excited where I'm like, oh, I found one that wasn't around. But yeah, if you want to put the time and effort in, it's there. And I get it. Not everybody can do it, but guys like us will do it for you. You know, mm-hmm. And find the people who you believe in, the people you trust, people you have a little bit of fun with. Follow along, have some fun with it too. Because in the end, it's a game. It should be fun.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast feed, rate and review. It helps people find us. Make sure you like the video on YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and stick with us. It's draft week, baby. We got the live shows. We're going to be doing all sorts of coverage, daily written work, as always. So stick with us here.
At Maxwell, NBA.com. Real quick. I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt.
You're good. You're good.
Very big announcement. John Fanta from Fox College mm-hmm. Basketball is going to be joining Corey and I tomorrow evening. So we're going to be doing a show with him. It's just an honor that we get to just have these guests come on. But yeah, just shout out to John Fanta. Shout out to Fox Basketball. And yeah, we got a lot of stuff cooking, man. But again, I just want to thank you so much, Keith. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. Maxwell, we can bring us home. I'm sorry. I wanted to interrupt.
For sure. Oh, no, you're good. We'll see you all next time. Peace out.
Yep. Much love, y'all.